Labas and good afternoon. This is Kęstutis Reividas, and you're listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio right here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial and, of course, live streaming audio on the Internet, so you can listen anywhere in the world, real time at KTYM.com. Thanks again for tuning in to Independent Lithuanian Radio. Before we get on to our news and information, we have an announcement to make, a sad announcement, and that is the passing of Arvydas Antanas Vaišnys. Arvydas Antanas Vaišnys was 75 years old. He was born in April 1939 in Kaunas, Lithuania, and he passed away this April 27th. He lived in Los Angeles, California at the time of his passing, and he is survived by his wife, Onuta, and his daughter, Ruta. The ceremonies will be private. Arvydas Antanas Vaišnys was an engineer at JPL, and we extend our condolences to the family, and may he rest in peace. Well, our regular listeners know that we always give you the weather in Lithuania in case you're traveling there. It's been unseasonably warm, actually, but temperatures have kind of dropped back down to normal. And tomorrow will be 58 degrees in Vilnius. And Monday will be even colder, be down to 50, blustery with perhaps a few showers. Then it'll be 54, 62, and by the weekend, temperatures will be back in the 70s. A truly beautiful and warmer spring in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. Tonight, the Baltic American Freedom League is having its annual awards banquet at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. I think there's over 200 people signed up to attend. You can squeeze in if you show up and hear Congressman Ed Royce. Congressman Ed Royce represents parts of Orange County and the Inland Empire, and he'll be speaking about the Russian invasion into Crimea. And the topic will be Crimea Now, Who's Next? Very interesting talk, I'm sure. And the Ukrainian folk dance group will be part of the entertainment. Now, on the last day of his visit to the United States, Lithuanian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Linas Linkevičius, met with Ed Royce. And Ed Royce is chairman of the Committee on Foreign Affairs of the House of Representatives. Linkevičius met with him yesterday and to discuss regional energy security threats and energy security challenges caused by Russia's aggression against Ukraine. Royce told the minister that prior to their meeting, the Energy and Commerce Committee of the House of Representatives approved a law on liberalization of liquefied natural gas exports. It is hoped that the full House will vote on the law in the nearest future, some say as soon as 3 weeks. Linkevičius noted that a positive decision by Congress on the liberalization of liquefied natural gas exports is highly significant to Lithuania and other states of Central and Eastern Europe, which seek to diversify energy resources as much as possible and reduce energy dependence on one supplier. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that one supplier is Russia's Gazprom. So this is really important. Ed Royce, who will be speaking tonight at the Baltic American Freedom League, Congressman Ed Royce, annual banquet, met with Foreign Minister Linas Linkevičius. So hopefully you've gotten your tickets. This ought to be a very, very interesting evening at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. At a meeting during the conference of the Atlantic Council, Linkevičius and U.S. Vice President Joe Biden discussed the agenda established with President Dalia Grybauskaitė during Biden's recent visit to Lithuania. Now, earlier in the week, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry assured Lithuania's foreign minister, Linas Linkevičius, that the Baltic states have no reason to be intimidated by Russian sanction threats. Secretary John Kerry and Vice President Joe Biden's security advisor, whom I met at the White House, both clearly accentuated what we all care about, that the commitments of Article 5 are not questioned, and nobody should doubt them. The question is how we should help those whom we have no binding security commitments with, in this case, Ukraine. In this case, they are talking about things to be done and measures of pressure to be applied. When it comes to the Baltic states, there was a separate emphasis that the economic pressure measures and the indirect security threats are ungrounded, and our people should not be intimidated by them, said Linkevičius. In his words, the meeting with Kerry discussed better coordination of sanctions and other ways to pressure or prevent further escalation of the situation in Ukraine. Nevertheless, in the minister's words, everybody admits that the situation is currently getting worse, not improving. Now, most of you have heard about the fact that the pro-Russian, supposedly, activists and protesters detained observers from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, and they were detained in eastern Ukraine. Responsibility for the observers detained lies with the Kremlin, and Russian President Vladimir Putin personally, says Vilya Aleknaitė Abramikienė, a member of the opposition Homeland Union, Lithuanian Christian Democrats, and vice president of the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly. Unconditional responsibility, this is a quote from her, for the lives and safety of the OSCE military observers detained by the Russian special forces lies with the Kremlin and Putin personally. The international community will not accept any excuses over Ukraine's alleged military actions in Slovyansk, since it is obviously the top-level Russian military forces and its special services are acting in Ukraine's eastern territories. Therefore, such excuses will not be accepted, she said. She pointed out that the detention of the observers is, quote, a gross violation of international agreements, especially the Helsinki Final Act and its principles. Responsibility for the life, safety, and health of the observers lies directly with the Kremlin, she went on to say. Now, this is an interesting piece, how things are playing out. And this has been talked about earlier, but now, again, it's come up as a potential reality. Poland and Lithuania are working with Ukraine to establish stronger trilateral military ties after the recent political transition in Kyiv. Knowing that NATO membership for Ukraine is unlikely because of resistance from other European countries and Russia, Warsaw and Vilnius, two of Europe's strongest advocates for closer relations with Kyiv, hope to use the trilateral partnership to strengthen the Ukrainian military's Western orientation and build a closer alliance with Kyiv. Now, this is according to Stratfor Intelligence, which is a highly respected briefing about political and foreign affairs around the world. The Ukrainian political crisis and tensions with Russia mean Kyiv is more willing than it has been in the past to forge such ties, but persistent political instability and Kyiv's constant balancing act between the West and Russia call into question the potential strengthening of military ties between Poland, Lithuania, and Ukraine. In recent months, Polish, Lithuanian, and Ukrainian officials have met several times to discuss forging stronger trilateral military relations. These plans for deeper military ties are not new, but they have been postponed over the years largely because of a lack of political will from Kyiv. The political transition in Kyiv has given Vilnius and Warsaw an opportunity to assist Ukraine and finally strengthen these ties. During an April 22nd meeting with his Ukrainian counterpart, Mikhail Koval, Lithuanian Defense Minister Juozas Olekas said Lithuania was willing to offer Ukraine assistance in restructuring its defense forces. Since Poland and Lithuania went through drastic military reforms to join NATO after the fall of the Soviet Union and are still making reforms, their assistance and experience likely would help Ukraine improve ties with Western military forces on a technical level and could aid potential reforms within the Ukrainian military. Beyond assisting Ukraine with reforms, Poland and Lithuania are pushing for more long-term institutional ties through a three-country joint brigade. Warsaw, Vilnius, and Kiev agreed to set up this force back in 2009, 5 years ago, but tensions between Poland and Lithuania, as well as Kiev's lack of political will to strengthen defense ties, kept the brigade from actually materializing. The agreement to form the joint brigade was made while Western-orientated Viktor Yushchenko was the president of Ukraine, but its implementation was delayed after Viktor Yanukovych's victory in the presidential election 4 years ago in 2010. The aim of the joint brigade would be to have a small permanent staff with representation from all three countries headquartered in Poland to plan joint training and eventually joint missions under NATO, EU, or UN mandates. Setting up the joint brigade likely would not encounter many technical hurdles, especially since operational ties between Poland and Ukraine were quite strong. For 2 years, between 1998 and 2010, Ukrainian forces were engaged in the Iraq War under Polish leadership, and Poland and Ukraine jointly participated in the peacekeeping mission in Kosovo, at times with Lithuanian forces. The past collaboration between Poland, Lithuania, and Ukraine was tied into NATO operations, several of which Ukraine has been a part of as a partner country. Warsaw and Vilnius likely hope that their efforts to strengthen trilateral ties will also help Ukraine integrate further with NATO. As a result of the confrontation between the West and Russia, calls from the West and within Ukraine to give Kiev clearer prospects for joining the EU and NATO have grown louder. However, Ukraine's membership in these institutions remains unlikely for the time being. The new government in Kiev has noted that it is not seeking NATO membership at this time. Moreover, important Western European countries like Germany and France are willing to support the new Ukrainian government, but as in the past, they are hesitant to fully integrate Ukraine with Western institutions, fearing the high cost of integration and the possibility of souring relations with Russia. But Poland and Lithuania are more interested in Ukraine's Western orientation than other European countries are, and thus want stronger military ties with Ukraine in anticipation of the difficulties associated with formally integrating it with NATO. Whether Warsaw and Vilnius succeed greatly depends on the future political stability of Ukraine and the nature of the Ukrainian government. The current leadership in Kiev is interested in strengthening military ties with the Western countries as tensions with Russia persist, so more formal ties with Poland and Lithuania are likely. However, because domestic instability has created numerous new challenges for the Ukrainian military, ranging from defending the country's territorial integrity to dealing with leadership changes and the emergence of armed groups, foreign partnerships that do not directly help Kiev deal with these challenges will be a low priority. Ukraine's Western orientation is by no means cemented. Thus, Warsaw and Vilnius are likely to see Kiev's enthusiasm for military collaboration fade again, depending on the evolution of the relationship between Kiev and Moscow in the coming years. Now, there are literally 100 stories this week coming out of Ukraine and eastern Ukraine. You know, you have to pick something to focus on, and I look at this as good news, as one little story that Ukraine's president said yesterday that many pro-Russian rebels were killed and wounded in a crackdown by Ukrainian troops in the rest of eastern city of Slovyansk. You know, there's been a lot of criticism that the Ukrainians aren't organized well and that, in other words, the nationalist side, not the pro-Moscow side, and that they haven't been able to control their own territory. So that's why I think this is good news. Ukrainian troops are trying to retake the eastern city of Slovyansk. Russia has called an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council. Now, that happened yesterday, too, because of serious escalation of violence. Acting President Oleksandr Turchynov said two Ukrainian soldiers were killed and seven wounded in Friday's fighting, reported many insurgents dead, wounded, and arrested. He did not provide specific casualty figures for Russian forces. The news web, a news website reported that one loyalist was killed and as many 15 injured when a planned unity march in the port city of Odessa turned into a clash between pro-Russian forces and those supporting Kiev. The news site said the body of the victim was covered in the street by a Ukrainian flag. Turchinov charged that pro-Russian insurgents in the city were hiding behind regular citizens and firing from apartment blocks. We demand that the terrorists, saboteurs, and all those who took up arms against our country to lay down their arms, surrender, release hostages and administrative buildings, he said in a statement. The Ukrainian security service said its forces were fighting highly skilled, this is a quote, highly skilled foreign military men in the city, which is located about 100 miles west of the Russian border. That has become a focal point for the insurgency. Ukrainian Interior Minister said Slovyansk is now fully blocked by Ukrainian forces who have taken over roadblocks previously held by separatist rebels loyal to the Kremlin. A spokesman for Russia's permanent mission at the UN said that Ukrainian special forces were engaged in a punitive operation in the city. The two Ukrainian deaths were a pilot and a serviceman killed when two helicopters were shot down by surface-to-air missiles near the city. One pro-Russian militant was killed and another injured in the fighting, according to a spokeswoman for pro-Russia militias. The intensification of clashes had already led Moscow to warn that any hope of implementing the Geneva agreements was now all but over. Now, the story goes on and on and on, but the bottom line is that the Ukrainian forces, okay, the anti-Russian forces are fighting back and appear, at least for now, to be gaining ground to control some of their own territory and get it back after the annexation of Crimea by Moscow. Again, Ed Royce, Congressman Ed Royce, will be talking about that at the Baltic American Freedom League dinner tonight. We'll be right back.
Palinko, liepa, šalia kelio. Pravirko, motina, sena. Sūneli, tėvynė tave šaukia. Ir vėl laisva bus Lietuva. Sūneli, tėvynė tave šaukia, ir vėl laisva bus Lietuva. Aš toli, toli iškeliaus, nuo tėviškėlis.
As I said before the break, there's 100 stories about Ukraine, the Baltics, everything coming out. It's hard to, you know, pick them out. There's an interesting final thing I want to share with you that, you know, Moscow is subjecting Ukrainians, Russians, and the rest of the world to an intense campaign of disinformation that tries to paint a dangerous and false picture of Ukraine's legitimate government. Russia Today, okay, the show's called Russia Today, the Moscow-based TV network financed by the government is a key player in this campaign of distortion. Along with its Russian operation, Russia Today operates an English language broadcast out of Washington. Now, they've been saying all kinds of crazy stuff that isn't true. They even said, John Kerry, the Secretary of State, referred to Russia Today as a propaganda bullhorn. You know, they said things like last week that the United States has invested $5 billion in regime change in Ukraine. But these are not facts. They are not opinions. They are false claims. Now, the interesting thing about this is that it's even too much for some of the people working at the network. There's been an unprecedented on-air rebellion. The host of Russia Today, Abby Martin, condemned Russia's invasion of Crimea in a broadcast. Then one of the anchors, Lise Wall, resigned on the air, saying, "I cannot be part of a network funded by the Russian government that whitewashes the actions of Putin." So there you have it. This isn't all turning out as smooth as we're led to believe, that the whole of the Russian people support Putin. Of course, there is other news coming out of Vilnius. Vilnius is going to be included in the Rail Baltica route. Now, this is really great news because it's a European gauge railroad, and it's going to connect Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. Actually, more than that, the standard gauge railway track will connect Helsinki, okay, in Finland, then Tallinn, and Riga, Vilnius, and all the way to Poland to Warsaw, and will be eventually extended to Berlin. The European Union will fund 85% of the project cost. In Lithuania, it'll be about 360 kilometers long. And altogether, it's about 1,000 kilometers between Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania. This has been talked about for a long time. One of the reasons holding it up was Lithuania, somehow the planners, to make a long story short, wanted to pull Kaunas in to the Rail Baltica project and leave Vilnius out. So getting Vilnius into this has been a big deal. The investment is almost 4 billion euros in just Lithuania. Now, for me personally, the beauty of this is that in the end, you'll be able to get on a train in Berlin, a nice, modern, European gauge railroad track train, and have a great sightseeing tour heading to Warsaw, Vilnius, Riga, Tallinn, and beyond. A great thing. It's going to take several years, but it's been approved, and all sides appear to be satisfied now. And I guess the big question is, are there any rockers out there? Because fans of international hit and classic rock should mark May 21st if you're going to be in Vilnius, because American rock legends Aerosmith, yes, Aerosmith, will be performing in Vilnius. So put it in your calendars. If you're traveling to Lithuania, check out Aerosmith, because they know how to rock. And these guys have had 21 top 40 hits, 9 number 1 mainstream rock hits, 4 Grammys, 6 American Music Awards, 10 MTV Video Music Awards. Aerosmith, if you're a rock fan, you know who they are. And they're playing in Vilnius, their only concert in the Baltics, May 21st. And now for a story much closer to home. When I was growing up, there was a girl in our peer group, Ilona Bujienas. And when we all got a little more mature and older and people were starting to get married and get serious, a young man from Chicago, Lithuanian-American, Jeff Valaika, moved to Los Angeles. And Ilona Bujienaitė fell in love with Jeff Valaika, and they started a family. And here's a little article about what that family has produced. It's from Sports Illustrated earlier this year. On opening day at a sun-baked high school baseball field flanked by the Santa Susana Mountains, the last shortstop ran his fingers through the bountiful soil between second and third. That spot, says 18-year-old Nick Valaika, just feels like home. It was the beginning of the season at Hart High School in the Los Angeles suburb of Newhall, California, and the ending of a dynasty. Since 2000, Hart has reared about 70 major college and professional ball players, but a single family has owned the most prized real estate on campus. It was handed down like one of the blankets that Ilona Valaika crochets in the bleachers. She is running out of yarn. This is the 13th and final year that one of her sons will start at shortstop for Hart. Ilona and her husband Jeff had 4 sons spaced over a decade, united by position. Chris played short for the varsity as a freshman, then Matt started as a sophomore. Meanwhile, Pat stocked the snack bar, and Nick eavesdropped on scouts. When head coach Jim Ozella swung by the Valaikas' house for a booster club meeting one night in the early 2000s, he heard thumping noise out back. "That's Pat and Nick throwing balls off the garage door," Jeff explained. "I'll tell them to stop." "Oh, no," Zella protested. "They shouldn't stop." By the time Pat took over at shortstop as a sophomore in 2008, weary base runners groaned at the sight of another Valaika, another blonde, barrel-chested vacuum cleaner who could reach the hole as easily as he could clear the fence. Incredulous recruiters asked, "How many of them are there?" Ozella advised other aspiring shortstops in the area, "Maybe try second." Chris Valaika played at UC Santa Barbara and was drafted by Cincinnati in the 3rd round in 2006. Matt followed Chris to UCSB and was picked by St. Louis in 2010. Pat went to UCLA and was taken by Colorado in the 9th round last June. Nix committed to the Bruins after his sophomore year. Over the winter, the brothers were taking grounders at heart when they heard a familiar voice. "Now there's a picture," shouted Trevor Mattern, who played short at Hart in 2007, the only person to beat out a Valaika for a job in this century. Pat returned the position to the family the next year. Jeff and Ilona bought an ad in Hart's current media guide that reads, "Thanks for the memories, but there are too many to list." They saw Chris Homer in the majors. They saw Pat win an NCAA championship. They also got the call that Matt had fainted in a batting cage at spring training with the Cardinals and was forced to retire because of an aneurysm on his aorta. "What is the school going to do after they leave?" asks Phillies outfielder and Hart alumni Steve Susdorf. Pat poses a more pressing question. What are my parents going to do? In the past 20 years, they've never taken a vacation that wasn't related to baseball. On opening day, Ilona told Nick, "I can't believe that it's ending. I'm probably going to cry." She peers at her youngest, a 3-year starter in the on-deck circle. He is 6 feet, 185 pounds, but she sees a 4-year-old slipping a piece of gum through the fence to his big brother. "This is a chapter in life for every parent whose kids play sports," Ilona says. "We've just been blessed that our chapter lasted this long." There is still baseball to see and blankets to knit. Last week, the Valaikas met in Arizona to visit Chris at the Cubs camp and Pat at the Rockies, but Chicago is using Chris all over the infield, and Colorado has talked with Pat about different positions. At Hart, they were always together at short. "When I die," Ilona says, "I want my ashes scattered right there." She points to the strip of dirt between second and third. So what if she missed some Hawaiian getaways? This, to her, is heaven on earth. And congratulate the Valaika family. Jeff Valaika works at Roque & Mark Real Estate in Santa Monica, California, and one of the largest independent property managers on the west side and in Santa Monica. And Ilona is just about done raising a family of baseball players. Congratulations again, and this is an article from the March issue of Sports Illustrated talking about the Valaika baseball dynasty. Well, before we sign off today, we want to send out a very special Ilgausu Matu and happy birthday to perhaps our oldest loyal listener. Yes, Yona Shimonis of Santa Barbara. They listen on KTYM.com. Yona Shimonis of Santa Barbara turned 102 this week. 102 years old. Ilgausu Matu, happy birthday to Yona Shimonis of Santa Barbara, California. This is Kęstutis Deividas for Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. And we hope you enjoyed the program. Keep on listening, and maybe we'll see you tonight at the Baltic American Freedom League annual awards banquet at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. Bye bye.
Аплику мешкой Саргиво кричали Тик балта уэтэй ой, лиля, ой, лиля, лиля Саргибой кричали Тик балта уэтэй Аплику Панюрус, там все и гиря, и раудрой ужеюс, и сталге скаусмя. Ой, лиля, ой, лиля, лиля, и раудрой ужеюс, и сталге скаусмя. Бучуя, Gelaves.